Hello, Dave.
Hello, Ollie. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Welcome to Sustainababble 13.
Crikey. 13 and still going. A baker's dozen of podcasts, and here we are. How are things in Loughborough Junction?
Foggy. Foggy like my brain. What about you?
Beautiful and clear, like my brain isn't, in People's Republic of North Somerset, where the sun has come out and we've had a few days of glorious, glorious weather. Welcome, listener, to Sustainababble, your humble little podcast about the environment, all the stuff that goes on in it, and why everything is so confusing and difficult, and can't people just talk more clearly. We work for environmental charities, but all of the views expressed herein are ours and ours alone, so do take them with a pinch of salt, won't you?
Yes, and talking of salt, we have a fishy theme this week.
Very good.
Thank you. Salt, salt water, fish, yes. We're going to be talking about the drought, not here, but in California, America, and some fish-related news on that. We'll be talking about a particularly fishy Inhofe of the week, a fishy prediction, and some Sustainababble, which isn't really about fish.
No, not really. So let's get on with that, shall we?
Yes, let's crack on.
Sustainababble of the week.
So, Sustainababble of the week. This is the section where we have a look at some of the nonsense, the guff that's been spoken in the name of going green, and we rip it to shreds. What have we got this week, Dave?
Well, it's not about fish. It is about something, though, that is very fishy indeed, if you ask me.
Nice.
See what I've done there. Yeah. So this is the thing known as... Do you know what carbon offsetting is?
I do. Do you want me to explain it, or do you want to have a better go?
Well, if you want, there are two people doing this podcast. Why don't you have a go?
Right, so that's the thing which says, I'm doing an activity over here which results in carbon emissions, like driving a car or something. So therefore, I want to offset those emissions by having something elsewhere, another activity which is negative emissions to balance them out with. So something which sucks carbon from the air, in effect, like planting loads of trees because trees suck carbon from the air.
Yeah, so that's the basic idea. So if you're doing something bad, you kind of make up for it in some way by doing something good somewhere else. And there is...
Yes, I'm punching you in the face, but over here I'm saving a kitten from going to an untimely death.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like robbing someone in London and then paying into a victims of crime fund in Manchester or something like that, isn't it? That's the basic idea. So people like to use it, in particular in things like the aviation industry. And this week we have had a press release from JetBlue Airways, American airline, who have announced its 8th annual One Thing That's Green initiative.
Right, okay.
Yeah, one thing that's great. And as well as getting all of their staff to do things like adopt one energy-saving measure in their own house, JetBlue are also offsetting the carbon for all of their flights for the whole of April.
Okay.
And really this is... So there's nothing inherently massively babbly about this particular version of carbon offsetting. But offsetting as a thing, I've long thought, is an incredibly babbly thing to do, right? Have a listen, for example. Where's Arabella? Have a listen to the way they describe it in their outrageously twee little publicity about this.
Offsetting CO2 is a good way to keep happy customers in the air and our communities safe on the ground.
Oh, just listen to it. Just listen to this nonsense. Happy customers in the air and our communities safe on the ground, right?
Yeah.
What a load of babble. Honestly.
Yeah. Which communities, though? Not the communities who live in low-lying islands threatened by sea rise and typhoons because of climate change. It's not keeping them safe, is it?
No, it's not keeping the communities of polar bears safe in the Arctic either, is it? It's such a load of babble as a concept. Your fundamental model, if you're an airline, is about, right, this is what it is. Your business model is about spewing gases into the stratosphere, and those gases will kill people, right? There is very little way, in my opinion, to dress that up as you are somehow a force for green good, right?
Yeah.
Even if what you're actually doing, let's assume for argument's sake, and I don't think mechanically this actually works anyway for all sorts of reasons, but let's assume for argument's sake every gram of carbon dioxide that was emitted up in the stratosphere, where it's a lot more potent incidentally.
Radiative forcing,
yes, very yes. good. Let's assume that you were somehow able to make all of that go away. Well, all you've actually done is you've not made the planet any worse.
Yeah.
Right? It's like me saying, well done. It's like me saying I'm an incredibly green citizen because I stay in bed all day and I don't do anything.
The other thing I like about their website, so there's a little bit on it. It says, offsetting CO2, we're on it. And then they go to, well, you're not on it, are you? Because you're very much on sticking CO2 into the atmosphere in vast quantities. But moving beyond that, they say, we try to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from our daily operation, but we aren't able to completely eliminate them.
No.
Bless them. No, because that's how you fly around, isn't it? Yeah. So, of course you're not able to completely eliminate them. I don't want to get down on flying. I flew last year. I went to America. I'm a flyer, hands up. Although I do try to not go more than every 3 years. Somebody once told me that that's roughly compatible with a fair personal carbon budget, if that can avoid the klaxon. But I do get annoyed by airlines claiming that, you know, they're part of the solution. And we should, at this point, just give an honorary mention to our friend. Not our friend, I wish he was my friend, Frankie Boyle.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Listen, careful. You may well have seen this. if you didn't, it's well worth looking up on his Twitter feed. We can't repeat all the words he uses on his Twitter feed because he's Frankie Boyle, so he uses those words. But Richard Branson, visionary climate warrior and owner of vast airline, tweeted on the 30th of March, it's time for bold leadership and conservation for the Arctic. And then linked to a sort of bizarre kind of press release on their website, which was just him saying climate change is bad. And there's a picture of polar bears, to which Frankie Boyle replied, Dave, do you want to say this?
I can't really say it. He pointed out in some rather direct Anglo-Saxon that might be slightly contradictory, what with Richard Branson owning a very large airline. All I can say is, go and check it out for yourself.
So this week we are talking about drought, specifically drought in California. They are, as I think many of you will know, in their fourth year of drought. And the situation is getting very, very dire. And we were just talking earlier about how this is a very neat, in a fairly horrible way, example of the effects and causes of climate change being played out very much in front of our eyes.
Opinion has been a bit divided, actually, on whether or not the drought is caused by climate change. There was a paper last year from the American government that said, actually, probably chances are this drought is mostly just a bit of a statistical variation. But then all the climate scientists came out and said, yeah, but let's face it, the fact that it's getting hotter doesn't help, does it? And the mayor of California came out just a few days ago and said, look, climate change is not a hoax. It is happening. This is what it looks like. And it does seem to be an example. Even if you know, it's always very difficult to point to specific things that climate change is doing and point to specific impacts on the ground and say these things are linked. But it does definitely look like this is what, these all correspond to what a changing climate will do. So one of the main causes of the drought is that there's been a lot less snow over the winter. Most of the reservoirs in California get restocked by snow. There's been a lot less of it.
Mm.
That obviously ties in with climate change. And what you've got, what's really interesting, is some of the US's most fertile agricultural areas are now in serious bother, kind of existential bother. Some of them were reclaimed from desert through irrigation and are going to go back to being desert again. Mm. And there's some really, really scary stuff. I was reading a piece, we'll post a link to it, on drilling for water. They're having to drill deeper and deeper down below the dry earth to get out water from aquifers, some of which has been there for a million years. I mean, you're talking, really, really draining the last drops, if you see what I mean, out of what's left. And what are they supposed to do? They've built an entire, as have huge parts of the world, they've built an entire civilization based on assuming that water would carry on being there forever, and it's starting to run out. And they've got two choices. If you're a farmer and you farm your land and it's just getting drier and drier, you've got two choices, which is just go deeper and deeper to get more water out, or pack up and leave. Perhaps the most interesting thing for me is, what is it, if you look at the causes of climate change and you look at the response that the mayor has put in place, what he's done is he's ordering statewide cuts in water usage by 25%, because apparently there are targets that haven't been met for how much water can be used. They haven't been met, and mostly that is down to telling householders to use water differently. So things like more efficient toilets and water your lawns less and that sort of stuff. And what was that statistic you had about the amount of water that your Californians use?
The average household in California, according to a 2011 study, uses, I think it was about 360 gallons of water, US gallons of water, a day. And over half of that goes on landscaping and other outdoor activities. So basically just, watering your lawn. I was in California last year, and it's extraordinary. The scale of irrigation is extraordinary, but it's also so weird. You drive through what by last year were kind of big, dusty, orange sort of moonscapes, and then suddenly you come across a fruit farm, which is, just being pumped full of water the entire day to grow these things. And it is a fairly stark reminder that it's not where fruit farms and fruit trees sort of would ordinarily be. And you wonder how long this can be maintained. But the other thing, though, the other industry, which episode four?
Which one?
Three.
Two.
Two. Damn, I knew I shouldn't try to play your game. Episode two, frack, right? Lots of fracking in California. And so the fracking industry last year used 70 million gallons of water to frack, and there isn't any suggestion that they should be using any less either. So it's a question of who bears the brunt of these cuts.
Yeah, and if you look at like meat and dairy, so I've just seen a statistic says that 80% of all of California's water is used for meat and dairy. And I suppose it points to, it points to the fundamental way. It's a bit like the offsetting stuff, actually, that what you see as a response to problems like this is telling people to sort of waste less on frivolous stuff. But the fundamental way we run our society and the stuff we all want to eat, like meat and dairy, and the stuff we all want to have, like gas that comes out of the ground, we kind of, that's not really challenged. And what interests me is, at what point do we start to challenge it? So, people are going to find they're not able to water their lawns, and a few lawns are going to die, or they'll just water their lawns anyway, and then the Californian police will come around and shoot them in the face for no reason. But one of the main problems here is just the way we run our society. You look at somewhere like California, look at somewhere like Las Vegas, where you've built, these colossal, great, exuberant, consumerist meccas in the middle of deserts, where people are told they can have whatever they want, and we've got used to having whatever they want. And some of those, it's those things that actually we might have to really start looking at. And this is what interests me, when do we start to look at that?
I talked in the last episode about going to this conference, this Changes Everything conference, and somebody there was talking about their experience of the international climate negotiations and dealing with some of the American diplomats there. And they were saying that their sort of opening gambit was, one thing that's not up for negotiation is the American way of life. You know, so we're coming to these talks to talk about how we can limit global temperature rises to 2 degrees. But just so you know, the way we live is not, that's not up for debate. You know, that's that continues, and it can't really, can it? I mean,
if I can pick one thing that I reckon is a sort of constant theme throughout our mopey little podcasts, it's that tension, isn't it? It's the sort of that there are deep systemic structural things wrong with the way we run our lives and our economy and the stuff we assume that we can have, which is just out of kilter with the amount of earth that we've got to sustain it. Go right back to episode one, episode fans, and listen to us talking about crocodiles in swimming pools, and you'll see where we're coming from.
That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a bit odd. There were a lot of drugs that year. I think, you know, this is what climate change looks like. And the other thing that interests me, really, is you're talking about the world's richest country here. And obviously, you know, for the farmers on the ground and for the people who are on the wrong end of the drought, it's hugely problematic. But imagine if you're somewhere a lot poorer, where it is literally a matter of subsistence farming, where you live hand to mouth from the crops that you grow in the ground. You know, this is where you start to see how little climate change you need for places that are already marginal. And we've got more and more people trying to get more and more out of the earth. It can't take it. It can't take just a few sort of tips in the wrong direction. And this is where the fish come in. So there is there's a thing that apparently is an issue whereby it's been prohibited to pump water from some bits of California to some other bits because it would gnaws up, getting slightly out of my depth here, gnaws up the habitat for a particular type of fish, which has been banned. And that
the
is...
fish has been banned?
No, well,
been
no.
Been barred? No. Oh, yeah, sorry, mate, not tonight. Sorry, mate. Oh, you don't want any trouble here.
And the fish isn't banned, but moving the water around is the banned bit because it's bad for the fish. And I think that is a thing. I mean, that is, I was reading something else that says that is, you know, if you're a farmer, that is exacerbating your problems. But it's not the cause of the blinking drought. The cause of the drought is decades and centuries worth of putting agriculture and people, putting far too much agriculture, far too much industry, far too much people into a desert and irrigating it and gradually running down the water, then chuck on some climate change, which is caused in large part by the sort of industry you're putting on there in the first place, and then start drilling deeper and deeper and deeper into the diminishing reserves that you've got, and then sit around going, well, I don't understand what's done that. It must be the environmentalist's fault.
Inhofe of the week. Good, so Inhofe time, and he is, of course, the whole reason that we talk about beastly, nasty, awful people who have screwed up our week. It is time to see who we've got this week, and continuing the fishy theme, who have we got, Dave?
Yeah, well, this is where we really go full fish. So the Daily Mirror had
fish
a...
Fish 2.0.
Yeah, bring on the fish. So the Daily Mirror had a story. This is horrible. I don't like this at all. Daily Mirror had a story this week about seal cubs and seals. Aww. So basically what's happening is...
beautiful little things.
Oh, they're so pretty. I've got a picture
of them. Go up to Blakeney
in
North Norfolk and go and look at the little seal cubs on Blakeney Point. You ever done that?
I have done that, and loads of people do it because loads of people like seals, right? Yeah. And the reason being, seals are pretty. And we had, back in episode 10, we had a great long bang on about pretty animals and why is it people only care about the pretty animals. Well, I'm probably about to be guilty of that myself, but seals are dead pretty, right? And people get really, really upset, don't they, about killing them, like in places like Canada, where 500,000 seals tend to get killed. I think that's that many, you know, every year. And I think people don't think we do that over here, but we do. And the Daily Mirror had a story this week saying that 200 seals were killed last year alone in Scotland by fish farmers, which is where the fish come in. The reason being, you know, we eat fish, seals eat fish, therefore we kill the seals. That's basically the...
More fish for us
to put into... food that we end up only buying 60% of and chuck the rest into the bin. Where's that quote? Where is it? You found this. What does the guy say?
Oh, yeah.
The
well,
fish industry?
I mean, you've got the Seal Protection Action Group, SPAG, who say there's lots of prejudice against seals and people see them as pests. Hey, how can you see a wild animal in the ocean as a pest? It's crazy. Anyway, that isn't the bit that is Inhofe. He's obviously on the right side. What you do have is a chap who is very much on the wrong side, and his name is Scott Lansborough. Landsberg. I don't know. And he's the head of the Scottish Salmon Producers Organisation. I would have thought that salmon producers are mainly other salmon. Anyway, apparently he sees himself as
how
a salmon
little
producer.
You don't understand anything about biology, do you? You don't understand anything. Seals are pests and salmons are created by us. Get that into your head.
By Scott.
Yes, by Scott.
And his buddies. Yeah. Anyway, he said in response to this story, we have championed deterrence techniques that are designed to keep seals away from our fish, and shooting is always last resort. When a determined seal attacks fish in our pens, it can kill and damage large numbers, and it is important that we do whatever we can to reduce the chances of this happening. I tell you what would reduce the chances of killing and damaging large numbers of salmon, and that would be you not killing and damaging large numbers of salmon, you idiot. It's so ridiculous.
I'd love to know what the deterrence techniques that they try out on the seals are. Well, so they probably start with leaflets.
Put a sign up.
Don't they? Yeah, put a sign up. not welcome here. Flip off. And then they move into some sort of neighbourhood watch programme where they go around and, you know, whisper about the seals. And then when that fails, they shoot them in the face. What's gone on here? How have we ended up in this state? And why is it all right to kill seals? It isn't, is it? Have I missed something? What an Inhofe.
Reasons to be cheerful.
So, cheer. Woo!
Hey! Yeah. Woohoo!
Oh, God. We love being cheerful. As this episode and previous 12 aptly demonstrate, we are cheerful people. And this week we have a fishy reason to be cheerful.
Go on, then. Off you go. Yeah. Put me in my place.
Right. Oh. That is very nice. I'm just going to leave that to hang a little bit.
Leave that in there. Don't think about it too long. You'll get an awful haddock.
Oh, now I can't think of one. Damn. If ever there was an example of how unscripted this podcast is, that was it. Right. Cod. Yeah?
Yeah.
We
cod
all
fish.
Know that cod's knackered. If you like your fish and chips, you know that you've got a terrible crisis of conscience when you do, because you can't eat cod because there's none of it left. Not true. They are right. Bouncing back.
Cod don't bounce, do they?
Bounce.
Pretty sure
your
they
head.
Kind of splat.
Yeah, the cod are bouncing back. Stock of northeast Arctic cod, which was, I think you pulled this out, was more than 4 million tons during World War II. Had got down to a historic minimum of a lot less than that in 1983, something like 740,000 tons. Mm. And so we've been told for a long time that we can't eat cod, can't fish it, they're all knackered, but they have bounced back.
Yeah, sort of bounced back. So this all comes from a bit of research that was out this week from the Marine Stewardship Council and a body called Sea Fish, which is a government UK government funded thing about seafood. And it's quite a good example of putting a positive spin onto something that actually, when you look at it, isn't that positive at all. The good thing is that stocks of cod in the North Sea are improving, and according to the Marine Stewardship Council, could be certified as sustainable within 5 years, right? So what you're basically saying is something...
Currently not sustainable.
Not sustainable, yeah. So I think bounced back is rather overdoing it. Potentially one day in the future, maybe still being able to survive is probably where we're heading to.
Yeah, all right. I take that point. But they are definitely improving, right?
Yeah, they're improving. And actually, I'm genuinely not going to be too down on that, because... The fishing. I had a good look into all of this to try to get my head around it. I don't really fully understand. One of the things this podcast exists to do is to admit about the stuff that we don't fully understand. And I don't fully understand how EU fishing policy works. And I don't think many people do, except, you know, fishermen and the EU. I don't think Nigel Farage does, for example. I know that the cod is in bother, and I know that they have been putting in really strict catch limits on how much cod you can catch, because otherwise, you know, the EU this is, because otherwise all the cod will run out. And I know that a lot of fishermen, include, you know, with the support of the UK government over the last couple of years, have said, well, sod that, we're going to catch the cod anyway. And it's a bit like we were talking about with the farmers in California. There's a bit of a sort of inevitable tragedy about it, where you've got people whose job is to fish. Their job is to fish cod, right? And they're not going to react very well to the fundamental of having that job taken away. So probably chances are there's a huge pressure for them to continue catching cod. So in order for them to have actually slowed it down at all and started to look a bit more cheery, I am actually faintly optimistic about that. I am genuinely giving you a little thumbs up. Look.
Oh, you have got little thumbs and they're up.
I've got tiny little thumbs. What I like, just to wrap this section up, I did like the one of the authors of the report, who said, who was asked, you know, 8 out of 9 of inshore fisheries are suffering from serious failings. Is that a reason to be cheerful? And he said, well, are you a glass half full or a glass half empty sort of person? I'm a glass half full, because now we've got a plan. So we know something's awful, but we've got a plan. Imagine if we didn't even have a plan. That is some serious sunny side up. We should get him on here, that bloke, to come and drag us out of the gutter when we're in a bit of a slump.
Election news.
It's still an election. We have under 1 month to go, thank the Lord.
That's a glass half full way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is we've got over 3 weeks of this gubbins still to go.
Yes, sorry about that. Which ties in nicely with our theme this week. There's been some animal electioneering. We won't dwell on this too much, but favourite spots include Farage in a boat with Joey Essex talking about fish. Brilliant.
And vajazzles.
Really?
Yeah, and vajazzles, yeah. Joey Essex described Nigel Farage as ream. Absolutely no idea, genuinely no idea what that means. It's the first word that I've come across that young people use. I have literally no idea what it means.
Do you think he meant bream? Thank you very much.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was left floundering.
Oh, crikey, look what I've started. You really are the soul of this podcast with jokes like that.
Where are we going from here? Yes, so Joey Essex, fish, Farage. We also had David Cameron, not at all cynically, holding a cute little lamb and feeding it poison. Sorry, milk.
Milk, yeah. Well, led to some rather wonderful images on social media, as you can imagine. And some rather coarse language as well.
Which we don't condone. No. And of course, the big story of this week was a conversation which, according to everyone involved, didn't happen, being leaked by somebody in the civil service about Scotland's first minister, who is a fish, Nicola Sturgeon.
Yeah. And who, of course, replaced Scotland's previous first minister, Alex Salmon.
Duh.
Yeah, but still, come on.
So thank you, electoral people, the political class, for conspiring to make our episode the most puntastic yet.
Yeah, and thank you, Ollie, for delivering election news that might be the most vapid and vacuous that anybody in the entire media world has bothered to record. Well done. There was a lamb, there was some fish, and the Scottish First Minister has a funny name.
Prediction time.
Right, so prediction time. Every week, we whack our crystal balls on the table, stare into them longingly, and try to work out what's coming up. But first, we see how we did last week. And, well, last week, I made a prediction, and I made a nice broad prediction.
You did. You said that the three main political parties would publish their election manifestos in the following week, didn't you?
Yeah.
And we've done that thing again, which I you remember that I actually said that's a ridiculous prediction, but actually the thing that we've done is it's now, we're recording this a bit early because I'm going away on holiday again, because I keep doing that, and so it's Thursday when we're recording this, and as at Thursday morning indeed, so as at the time of recording this hasn't yet happened, but I suppose it still could, couldn't it? I reckon at the time of recording, I think it's not very likely because I think they're still sneaking out their big announcements. I don't think the manifestos are quite ready yet. I said it was, I wasn't sure about it, but, you know, could still be wrong. But we're going to have to wait a bit for that, aren't we? See if you've pulled that off.
Sorry about that. So that it remains one all.
It does.
After just 13 attempts.
Yeah, and so I can give a prediction now, and you're going to tell me off for this. The prediction is twofold, right? The first one is a thing that isn't a particularly bold prediction. It's going to be, between the time we're recording this podcast, Thursday, and the time people listen to it next week, we're going to have the hottest day in the UK so far this year.
What? Right?
Which, I know, as you pointed out to me earlier, you know, it's spring and stuff gets warmer. That's not particularly...
Yeah, what are you, the Daily Express?
No.
Oh my God, it's summer, it might be hot.
No, but actually, the Daily Express was a very good bridge into my actual prediction, where what we're going to have, I think, on the front page of The Guardian, I think there is going to be a picture of pink people in deck chairs on a beach, and very, very close to it, narratively next to it, is going to be climate change strikes Britain or something like that. So there's going to be, because we've had the first hot day of the year in the middle of April, there's going to be a big front page story in The Guardian saying, look, it's climate change. And that's what I think is going to happen. And while I'm all up for pointing out that climate change is actually a thing and is actually happening, I'm not quite sure that the first hot day of the year is necessarily proof of that.
So you are becoming this podcast's very own Michael Fish.
Oh, splendid. There was me thinking that you wouldn't manage to get a fish reference into predictions, but you've done it. You are absolutely amazing. Very good.
Right, so that is it for Sustainababble episode 13.
Crikey. Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for putting up with the fish puns. I have a sneaking suspicion our social media channels this weekend are going to have one or two more fish puns. We would urge you to join in. Of course. You can hear my brain, can't you? I'm actually trying to think of a fish pan on the fly and I can't think of one. Thank you to Arabella for furnishing us with Sustainababble. Thank you, as always, to Dickie Moore for the music that we start and end this podcast with and little bits in between. And thank you to all of you for listening. You can get in touch with us via Twitter at The Babble Wagon, on our Facebook page, and by emailing us at, wait for it, hello@sustainababble.fish. Which is our website address as well.
Very nice. Okay, well, that just about wraps it up. We will have a lovely holiday, another well-deserved and frequent holiday for you, Dave.
I work very, very hard and I deserve lots of time off.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, and I thought that went well this week. You were very much dancing to my tuna.
Stop it now. Stop it now. Stop. Stop now. Stop.